Warning: the following program is serious about wine, but doesn't take wine too seriously. It may make you laugh, or thirsty, or both. And we're sorry if it makes you spit. This is Grape Encounters Radio with David Wilson. This week on Grape Encounters Radio...
If you're looking for an old Italian wine, you might find it in Italy, and you'll just have to go and pick it up there.
that's easier said than done. That's a long drive from Auckland.
Well, you
know,
if you love that wine, if you love your deer, you may want to repeat your honeymoon.
There you go.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow.
And it is time for your weekly Grape Encounter, and have I got a story for you to start today's show. There is a piece of technology that has been developed in Denmark, and it's a collaboration between a university in Denmark and others. We've got the lead professor on the line today. It's Duncan Sutherland. Hey, that's not a Danish name.
No, I'm not Danish. Actually, I've moved around a lot. I'm British, but I'm living in Denmark now, working at the university.
And the university is Aarhus University.
Yeah, that's the second biggest city in Denmark on the mainland. It's a nice town.
A nice university, too, as I understand. There are a number of Nobel Prizes that have come out of that university.
Yeah, it's really got a reputation and an effort to make good science, but we also do some of the industry work. It's a good university. It took me a while to find a place to form my group, and I'm very happy to be in Denmark. It's a good place to be right now.
Okay, so let's talk about what you are calling it. I don't know if you're calling it this or if the press is calling this. It's the Minnie Mouth. Not Minnie Mouse. Yeah, okay.
So the thing that we've made is sort of a sensor which is meant to mimic what goes on in your mouth while you're drinking wine. And it sort of came out of some of the research we were doing where we were looking at how proteins are changing and interacting with small molecules, which is something which is true in wine, but it's also true in medical situations as well. So the idea was that we wanted to be able to measure what happens and how the proteins change when these polyphenols from wine bind to the proteins. We call it the Minnie Mouse because it's sort of a miniaturized version, but it's also sort of a play on words because we are in a nanotechnology center, and our center is actually called the iNano Center. So nano is very small.
So what actually does the device do? You're looking for astringency, right?
What we've tried to do is to look at the standard astringency tests. And what they tend to look at is aggregation of proteins. They're sort of really far down the astringency track with what's happening in your mouth. But we tried to look into the sort of the molecular interactions that are going on. And then we wanted to look as early as possible in that process. And then also to sort of couple it to a sort of readout. So we had a sensor. So that was kind of our concept, was that we would take proteins from the mouth and we would couple them to a sensor. And we have a few different types of sensor, but we picked one particular one which would allow us to give a good signal. And that's kind of an ordinary type of a sensor. So our sort of concept was to go a step further and see whether we could also monitor how the protein changes when these tannins come and bind to the proteins.
It's interesting that this research is being done in Denmark. Denmark, not necessarily a country known for wine. So you're collaborating with other winemaking countries, right?
Yeah. For this project, our wine expertise comes from Portugal. So there's Victor and Garedia in Porto in Portugal. And in fact, the PhD student on the project is Joanna. She's also Portuguese. So she's come from Portugal up to Denmark to carry out her work. But I have to say that although we don't have much wine, we do have a lot of things with astringency. So we have a big beer industry and we have a fruit juice industry as well.
Yeah, I see that. Yes. And with global warming, they're talking about Denmark and Norway and other countries eventually growing grapes. So you just have to wait it out.
Well, I've actually had a champagne or method champagne stuff from Denmark. So there is already some growth going on.
Yeah, it is warming up. So tell me what the applications of this particular device are specifically for the wine industry. How would it be used?
Yeah, so how we envisage it, we're not going to be replacing sensory panels. We kind of imagine it that at the early stages of the wine production, after you've done your fermentation, where you perhaps want to measure and adjust for the astringency levels early on. So that would be the idea that within production, you might be able to make sort of an objective measure of how much astringency there is in a particular batch. And then you could either add something to reduce it, or you might be blending wines together. So it's more sort of a trying to get the consistency of the wine the same year after year, rather than making wine per se better.
So when we say astringency, we're really focusing on the tannins.
Yeah, that's right. It's these small organic molecules that are binding to proteins in your mouth. It sort of causes the proteins to unfold a bit, and then they can aggregate together, and that gives you that sort of squeezed feeling in your mouth with the astringency.
So then you could actually assign a value to the amount of astringency in the wine, is that correct?
So the reality is that there's a lot of different molecules that can cause astringency, And each one has a different strength, is what we're finding now when we're using our sensor. And perhaps for a wine company, you're not so interested in exactly which one is causing it. So what we've done is we've made a calibration versus one particular molecule, and then we've used that as a sort of a calibration scale. So then we can give it a number based on that scale. So that's the idea, that you have a number between, you know, like 1 and 10,000.
We're talking to Professor Duncan Sutherland. He is at Aarhus University in Denmark, and we are talking to him on the line all the way to Denmark. He and his team have created something that has been dubbed the Mini Mouth, and I saw one headline that said it threatens to replace human wine tasters. That's a little bit much, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, in the end of the day, wine is something which is a personal, subjective choice. And it's always going to be, you know, the customers and consumers are going to like something. So it's not going to be replacing any of that. But I mean, I could see a place where perhaps you could have a measure of wines, which could be, yeah, it's difficult for a sensory panel to look at many, many wines. Whereas with this, you could perhaps look at 1,000 different wines and you could have a sort of objective scale. Yeah, we see it mostly as something that would be potentially used by industry in their production.
You know, being in the wine business, it's very interesting to watch people. Generally speaking, the dryness of a wine is the thing that a person is most likely to object to. And you'll find a lot of people will say, I just don't like red wine, for instance, because they don't like the effect of the tannins on their mouth. I could see a time where you would actually use a device like this to score the tannin so that somebody could say, well, I'm good up to a 3.
Could work rather well. I mean, if we were to do a screening of a whole bunch of wines, you know, on the internet, then people could just look up whatever wines they want and stick within their bracket, so to speak.
And then the person who really likes a wine that dries your mouth out like chewing on deodorant, they could pick a 10, right?
Yeah, but I mean, what they would miss out with that would be that it's not just the single sensory feeling all on its own. So it's going to mix in with all the flavors and other things in the wine. So I think that could be a guide, but they should still perhaps go and taste that or, you know, get some advice from a wine expert on, you know, how it blends in together.
And what kind of reaction have you gotten so far once you announced the existence of this device? Have you had some of the big winemakers contact you?
No, we've had calls from small companies who are delivering consultation to the wine companies. I mean, here we're making contact with beer companies in Denmark. I mean, we're a university and we have done the proof of principle. So we don't have a device that we could sell to people. And I think that now is going to be the stage of looking at exactly how to make it cost effective and how reliable would it be. I mean, so far we've tested with, you know, a number of wines, but not thousands. So it's still at a stage where when we're trying to raise funding through the Danish government scheme to drive it a bit further along the track towards commercialization.
So what do you think the time frame would be before it goes to commercialization? Are we talking years?
I think so. I think that we're talking several years, 2 or 3 years. Of course, if some company decided it was of interest to them and they could drive it faster. But as a university, we're sort of driven by public funding. And, you know, we're usually on the timescale of several years for hiring a student, running a project, collaborating with a company, and then doing technology transfer. So it's not something that you'll find next week.
Not next week. What have you got invested in the project so far? Can you tell me that?
Invested in terms of company financing? Nothing.
No, I mean, how much has the university invested to get it to this point?
Aha, I see. I mean, the funding for the project has come about half from the Portuguese government and half from the university here and some Danish projects. I guess, let's think in dollars. Yeah, maybe $200,000.
Okay.
But I mean, the main purpose of the project from the university side is training and education process of training a PhD student who can then go out and work in industry. So the research is important, but it's kind of a side benefit of this educational process.
And what is the interest that the Portuguese government has in the project?
I mean, I think for them, it's just a general training. We went to the Portuguese Research Council, and they are obviously interested in projects which are going to be useful for their major industries. And so wine is a major industry down there. So I think not that they're specifically interested in the project exactly. It was that they were interested in training people and in research, which is in a wine-related topic, so that, you know, they could, people could go out and work in the wine industry.
Well, I think it's very interesting because, you know, up to this point, wine has been a very subjective thing. And, you know, so much of the decision-making process that people go through is based on the evaluations, human evaluations of wine by others. And the idea that we might be moving into an era where different technologies really could tell us a little bit more in very real terms about the wine. You know, on one hand, it does defeat some of the romance in winemaking, but on the other hand, it also eliminates part of the disappointment that comes with buying a wine and then not finishing it because it wasn't up to your particular personal standards.
It would be nice if we could get to the point where the technology could be cheap enough that, you know, you could have some independent groups could do screening of wines, or even you could buy it and use it in your home. I mean, that would be kind of fun, but I don't think it's quite at that stage right now. And I suppose in the end of the day, I mean, the really fine, expensive wines, it's going to be the blending of all the different flavors and tastes together. I mean, it's correct if, you know, if people don't particularly like tannins, then it'll be an easy way to tell. But actually, I'm the opposite. I quite like my astringent wines.
Okay, well, listen, it's been a pleasure talking to you, Professor Sutherland, Professor Duncan Sutherland in the Nanobio Interfaces Group at Aarhus University in Denmark.
Yeah.
And quite a reputation at that university, and now one of their latest innovations coming to the forefront of the wine industry. So it may be a little while before winemakers will be able to use it, but I got a funny feeling it's going to be a popular device. Professor, great to have you on.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you.
Let us know when you're actually producing them, and we can come out there and have a little fun.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Thanks very much. We'll continue with more Grape Encounters after this.
Connecting winemakers, wine lovers, wine adventures, and all things wine from around the globe. You are listening to Grape Encounters Radio with David Wilson, broadcasting from our wine cellar studio in idyllic Atascadero, California.
If you love wine, then you probably love to travel too. And there are two places you should really visit soon. The best part is you don't even have to pack a bag or leave your house. If you're looking for adventures in wine, log on to grapeencounters.com. There you'll find an audio library of more than 300 stories that will take you virtually anywhere you want to go. At grapeencounters.com, you'll find short subjects as well as full stories. All audio can be downloaded with one click, and you'll be amazed at the broad range of subject matter. Another place you really should visit is our Facebook group page. Simply search for Grape Encounters Radio or click on the link on our website. The Grape Encounters Radio group has become a formidable place for wine lovers to exchange ideas, introduce products, and share upcoming events. If you're not already a group member, then join the party on Facebook. Grape Encounters is more than a radio broadcast. It's a family of like-minded, fun-loving, unpretentious wine lovers. Come fill up your glass today.
This is David Wilson, and I want you to sail with me from Rome to Barcelona on one of the most luxurious cruise ships in the world, the completely reimagined Regent Seven Seas Mariner. Every year, I take listeners on a luxury voyage sure to create unforgettable memories. And next May, from the 10th to the 17th, our itinerary will include some of my favorite places on the planet. And I'll be there to make sure that your travel experience is purely amazing. Imagine visiting incomparable Rome, Florence, Portofino, Provence, and breathtaking Barcelona. The ports will be spectacular, and your elegant suite with a private patio will astound you. Book now and get 2-for-1 fares, free round-trip air, $200 shipboard credit, plus you pay nothing extra for wine, cocktails, shore excursions, even tips are included. For more information, click the link at grapeencounters.com. I've got a luxury cabin with your name on it. Click on the link now at grapeencounters.com.
Like certain wines, he's syrupy, sweet, and has long legs. Here's David Wilson.
Old red wine, well past its prime, may have to finish it after crossing the line.
I think it was probably about 2 months ago that I told the story of a friend of my wife's who had parents that were moving, and their daughter was cleaning out the cabinet where they stored all their wine. Well, lo and behold, in the back of that cabinet were some very, very old bottles of wine, many that would be considered to be rare bottles. For instance, a Chateau Lafite Rothschild 1979. I think there were some that went back to the 60s. A lot of Napa Valley wines, some of them from wineries that don't exist anymore. And the first place that we turned to find out more about these wines, oh, I omitted an important point. She gave these wines to us. There were two cases of them. And one of the places that we turned to immediately is a website that is called wine-searcher.com. And you can actually put in the names and years of these wines, and on many of them, get a fair valuation of the wines. And the person who takes care of that end of the business for winesearcher.com is Julien Mikkel, and he comes to us from Auckland, New Zealand. Except, Julien, you're French, right?
Yes, I'm French. Hi, David.
And nice to have you on. I was so impressed with the information that we got back from you. on all of those wines. And I think for the most part, we were able to find most all of them.
Well, I'm glad to talk to you, David. And yeah, glad you found what you needed on Wine Searcher.
So let's talk about you first and why it is that a Frenchman who's educated and I guess, did you grow up in Bordeaux or is that just where you got your education?
I grew up about 200 kilometers away from Bordeaux in Toulouse city in the southwest France.
And then you've been all around the world, but now you have found your way to New Zealand. Why is that?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm a qualified winemaker from Bordeaux, made some wine in some of the top crews of Bordeaux, including Chateau Margaux, and then I used my knowledge around the world, in different countries, Spain, Tuscany, in California, and Australia. And, made a switch in my career because I thought that my knowledge and my knowledge of wine could actually become useful to a wider wine community around the world, and decided that, Wine Searcher was the place to be. And so I'm currently using my wine expertise to help develop Wine Searcher data as well as wine information and basically help the wine community make better wine buying decisions.
I might mention that Wine Searcher is based in New Zealand. Did you go to New Zealand to work for Wine Searcher, or were you just bumping around the country?
Yeah, no, not exactly. I was making wines in different countries, and I was interested in discovering in New Zealand wine and making New Zealand wines, and came here for that and bumped into Wine Searcher and thought it was a great thing to do.
I don't want to get too far off the topic, but there were just some interesting statistics that were released about wine production numbers around the world, and generally speaking, in most places, wine production had gone down substantially, but in New Zealand, they had a really huge surge in the last year. I think it was over 25%.
Yeah, I think that's correct. As you know, New Zealand wine industry is fairly recent.
Yeah.
So it's developed exponentially in the last 15 years. A bit of a low production, with the global recession around 2008, 2009. But now, yeah, they're back into business and a lot of plantings are producing now, and they're doing really well.
And they really have an eye on quality, I think, there. And they've certainly managed to move a lot more product into markets like the U.S. because, 5 years ago, if you saw one or two bottles of New Zealand wine, that was a lot. And now they have whole sections. They've really done an excellent job of getting the wines out of the country.
Yeah, indeed. The average quality is really, really high. I think that, the average price per bottle of New Zealand wine is one of the highest of any country around the world. So average quality is pretty high, and mainly, with a lot of Sauvignon Blanc. So they have been around the UK market very strong there for quite a while. Australia is also, you may not know that, the Australians drink more New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc than Australian Shiraz. Would you believe it?
No, I don't believe that. That's amazing.
Now I think they're making their way quite strongly in the U.S. with your guys' palate opening up to this type of wine, fresh and crust Sauvignon Blanc.
I recommend them all the time to people. I think they're great values, and you're less likely to find a substandard bottle of New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc than you might from other places. They send pretty good quality wines out. Even the large production wines taste pretty good to me. But let's get back to winesearcher.com now, because it's such a cool site. You provide this service for people, and I really believe that all over the world, there are cabinets, there are basements, there are wine cellars, there are secret hiding places that have bottles of wine in them, many of which are in good condition, depending upon the climate situation in that area and where they were actually stored. But there are great wines yet to be discovered that people already own, and they don't realize that they've got a diamond in the rough.
Indeed.
So does that happen a lot with Wine Searcher, that people come upon a bottle of wine that they didn't realize they had, or that they'd just been saving for some special occasion, and then suddenly they go online and they go, oh my gosh, this bottle of wine that we paid $20 for 30 years ago is worth over $1,000.
Yeah, indeed. We get a lot of users. We have a lot of users. The whole world wine community uses Wine Searcher to find their wine. Many don't necessarily know that they can actually also value their wines on it. So quite often, we get users writing to us and asking, hey, I've just found that bottle of wine in my cellar or in my nanny's cellar, and how much does it cost? So, we get these questions all the time. And actually, you can just go on the website on Wine Searcher. We've got a page called Wine Valuation. So if you Google just Wine Searcher Valuation, you'll find it. And there you can just type in the name of the wine, Chateau Lafite, this wine in the vintage and click on a button and it'll give you the current retail price of that particular wine in the world.
So just how much is that dusty old bottle of red wine worth? We'll continue our conversation with Julian McKell of WineSearcher.com as your Grape Encounter continues. This is David Wilson, and I want you to sail with me from Rome to Barcelona on one of the most luxurious cruise ships in the world, the completely reimagined Regent Seven Seas Mariner. Every year, I take listeners on a luxury voyage sure to create unforgettable memories. And next May, from the 10th to the 17th, our itinerary will include some of my favorite places on the planet. And I'll be there to make sure that your travel experience is purely amazing. Imagine visiting incomparable Rome, Florence, Portofino, Provence, and breathtaking Barcelona. The ports will be spectacular, and your elegant suite with a private patio will astound you. Book now and get 2-for-1 fares, free round-trip air, $200 shipboard credit, plus you pay nothing extra for wine, cocktails, shore excursions, even tips are included. For more information, click the link at grapeencounters.com. I've got a luxury cabin with your name on it. Click on the link now at grapeencounters.com.
If you'd like to hear more no-nonsense talk about wine and all the fun that goes with it, check out winetalkshow.com. At winetalkshow.com, you'll find a massive library of content for fun-loving, unpretentious people who aren't afraid to step outside the lines and challenge conventional wisdom. We'll take you places you've never been before. That's a promise. Expand your wine horizons in unimaginable ways at winetalkshow.com.
Nestled between world-class Paso Robles and San Luis Obispo wine countries, the warm and inviting city of Atascadero is the humble heart of the Central Coast. With access to endless wine country adventures, including wine and olive oil tasting tours, artisan farm experiences, food, wine, and cultural events, historic Atascadero's cozy and oh-so-friendly atmosphere make it the perfect home base for Central Coast tourists. Discover more about the heart of the Central Coast at visitatascadero.com.
I've got red wine and blue memories and a heartache that won't set me free. I've got lots of time for drinking, lots more time for thinking. I've got red wine and blue memories.
He's in it to wine it. Here's David Wilson.
And your Grape Encounter continues. And you know, I don't think there could be anything cooler than to discover a bottle of wine that had been tucked away in a cool, dark place for decades. And this would have to be a place where the temperature was well-maintained and it never got warm and the bottle had never been disturbed. But, you know, it does happen. And how fun would it be to go to wine-searcher.com and find out that that bottle of wine that you paid, I don't know, $20 for years before was suddenly worth, well, your mortgage. Well, to talk more about this subject is one of the experts over at wine-searcher.com, coming to us all the way from Auckland, New Zealand. It's Julian McKell.
Well, I'm glad to talk to you, David.
So, Julian, I guess the thing that people have to remember is that just because you get a valuation back of, let's say, $1,500 on a bottle of wine, that's presuming that the wine is in good condition and that it hasn't turned and that it hasn't been misused.
Exactly.
So in the case of the wines that I got, the two cases, we've only been able to find maybe 3 or 4 that would be considered drinkable. The rest of them are just better off to be kept corked up, and we'll just leave them there as decorations, right?
Exactly, yeah. As you know, yeah, the storage condition for wine is crucial. The way the bottle looks as well, you know, can impact on the value, how the cork has handled time. If the wine's gone through the cork, that's not a good sign. So, yeah, ideally you'd find several bottles of the same wine and you'd be able to taste, or, you know, have an expert tasting the wine, really, to get a perfect value. But that said, you know, if you want to have an idea of how much an equivalent wine for the same vintage would sell at a retailer, wine searcher can help you.
We're speaking with Julian Mikkel. He is the wine team manager with wine-searcher.com. Check this site out for a number of reasons. First of all, the subject that we're talking about is what happens when you find an old bottle of wine that might be valuable. How do you find out objectively what it might be worth? And you can just plug the information in on winesearcher.com. And if it's a bottle of wine, as I understand it, Julian, that can be bought someplace else, then you can give a valuation on the wine, right?
Yeah, that's exactly how the valuation works. It'll find a current retail price for your wine.
Now, winesearcher.com is also a great source for wine news and information. They've got a lot of resources there. Another purpose that it really serves very well is, you know, say for instance, you served a very special bottle of wine to the person you loved on the day you got engaged, and you kept that cork, and now it's 20 or 30 years later, and you want to find that same exact bottle of wine, there's a pretty good chance you could do it with Wine Searcher, couldn't you?
Yes, indeed. We do list as many wine retailers and producers for free on Wine Searcher, so everyone's selling wine to individual people, so retailers, all retailers are listed on Wine Searcher. So if anyone's selling this particular wine anywhere in the world, there's a good chance that you'll find it on Wine Searcher, hopefully.
So when I put in a wine and I'm looking for a specific wine, varietal, and vintage, it may come up with several different listings, right?
Yeah, if different people are selling it, you will have different prices, different people, different states in the United States, but you'll probably be able to find it perhaps in Europe if it's not in the U.S. and get it shipped. You know, if you're looking for an old Italian wine, you might find it in Italy and you'll just have to go and pick it up there.
that's easier said than done. That's a long drive from Auckland.
Well, you know, if you love that wine, if you love your deer.
Well, you know, I think you just write them or call them and have them ship it to you.
Yeah.
If they can do it, actually.
You may want to repeat your honeymoon.
There you go. At any rate, going back to winesearcher.com, it's really got to be one of the most visited wine websites that exist today. You have millions of people going there every month. How many are we talking about?
Yeah, we get about 5 million visits, so that's, you know, people are visiting. A lot of people visit several times,
wow,
obviously. So it's about 3 million people every month around the world using the website. A lot of Americans, nearly 1.5 million Americans, use Wine Searcher every month.
So going back to valuable wines, what are the wines that are most likely to appreciate in value at the greatest rate? I mean, it's obvious that there are certain names that we would expect that of. I just mentioned Chateau Lafite, and that's probably the one that comes up top on the list, Chateau,
yep,
Margaux, things like that. But in general, where do you see appreciation the most? I'm talking about in the arena where the average person, not the wealthy person who collects really valuable wines, but for the average person, what are the wines that they could hang on to and maybe see the most appreciation? Are they American? Are they French? Are they Spanish? What do you think?
Well, it goes varying with the different markets around the world. You know, like Asia has been booming quite a lot, and the fashions there for wines tend to vary quite rapidly. So as you said, Bordeaux has been really strong and trending, and so the value is very stable, has been really, really good. Well, actually, I may recommend, you know, your users to go and Wine Searcher and find for themselves, because for each wine we do track over time, so we've got a little graph of the value of each wine tracked month after month for the past 5 to 6 years.
Oh, yeah.
So you can actually see the trends for an individual wine and see whether it's going down or not. So they can do that. But yeah, sorry, to answer your question more precisely. Well, as you said, Bordeaux is strong, but Burgundy, obviously, you know, and you find small producers that, you know, are famous, were famous to make extraordinary wines. And some of these bottles might not be known as much as the famous Bordeaux, but have a very high value or suddenly take a big leap in value. Lately, Spanish wines, Italian wines have been increasing in value. We're talking about, you know, some of the big names in Italy, but the value in Italian wines is definitely increasing, or has been over the last few years.
Yes, and I found that you actually have on the site the most expensive wines, so I can look at the most expensive wines that are listed on the site.
Indeed. did. We've got a list of the 50 worldwide most expensive wines. There are a lot of Burgundies in there. I think it's a bit over 30 out of the 50 are Burgundies. But you can also drill down to each country. So we'd have the list of the most expensive, 50 most expensive U.S. wines, French, obviously, Italian, Spanish, South African, or Argentinian.
A lot of German Rieslings on the list. A lot, especially the Trockenbeeren Auslese.
Yeah, exactly. So, as you know, these are extremely rare wines. They're not made every vintage. You need special conditions, fantastic sites, you know, vineyards to produce the wines. And also what happens is that they are small bottles, you know, like sometimes 200 ml or half bottles maximum. So the value per milliliter is also
even
very,
higher, yes.
Very high compared to light or still wines.
Yeah, absolutely.
Table wine.
You know what I only see on this top 50 list? I only see one American wine. This is very troubling to me.
Is it Harlan, is it?
It's a Screaming Eagle.
Oh, Screaming Eagle, yep.
Yeah, they're definitely going to make this kind of list. But I don't see any other. The French totally dominate this list. The French followed by the Germans, and that's really surprising to me. And I see Portugal on here, just one. Very interesting. Okay, well, it's wine-searcher.com, and so many things to see and do there. You can just fantasize about wines you'd like to own and maybe even have a little quiz with your friends as to what the most expensive wines in the world are. You can see if the wines that you have stored away safely and in a temperature-controlled environment are worth enough for you to be able to pay off your house. And you can find wines that you're sentimental about that you thought maybe had disappeared into oblivion. So it's really an amazing site. Also has a lot of news and information on there. And it's free, though you do have a professional version, right?
Yes, we have what we call the pro version that allows you to get to further results, so more prices, so you can choose which retailer to buy from more easily. You get access to further options. Search options, like you can choose bottle size and things. And something that relates to the topic we're talking about today, with the pro version, you can also create classified ads, your own classified ads. So if you found one of those bottles, you may want to give it a go at trying to sell it on WineSearcher and be listed amongst the retailers on the site.
I think you have not seen the last of me. I've got a few bottles I want to sell. Well, Julien Mikkel, so nice to have you on all the way from Auckland, New Zealand. It's been a pleasure, and thanks for telling us more about WineSearcher.com. It's such a great site, and if you're a wine lover and you really want to explore some things that you haven't fooled around with before, this is a great site to get really creative and find out maybe what your wine inventory might be worth and find out if you have something very special that you didn't realize that you owned. So, Julien, thank you very much for being on.
Well, it's been my pleasure, David. I really like your show and really, really glad I was part of it today and helping the wine community.
Well, we're glad to have you on. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, it's going to be the Grape Encounters News with our Grape Encounters Senior Wine News Correspondent, Larry Gifford. Stay tuned for that. But before we do that, there is something that I have wanted to share with you for what seems to be an eternity. I have kept my lips zipped about this for so long. It's one of those things, you know, where I just plain didn't want to jinx it. And so I haven't said a word about it, not a peep about it on Grape Encounters Radio. But now it is time to spill the beans, to lift the lid off of the great big secret that's been, well, brewing for the better part of my adult life, but certainly the last year or so. As you know, we moved our studios to the Central Coast, California wine country because it was convenient to get to a lot of different wine countries and really all over the country, if not the world. But we built our studios here in the city of Atascadero, and we have a rather significant retail complex that we've been developing. Well, one of the things that we've been working on, and it really is a chore if you decide to take on this kind of endeavor, is, well, believe it or not, a wine tasting room. And I am pleased to report that the Grape Encounters Emporium, and that's spelled E-M-P-O-R-I-U-M, POURIUM is going to be opening its doors next week, and I couldn't be happier. This is going to be a wonderful place to come and visit and a wonderful opportunity for us to be able to sit down and really practice what we preach, to show you exactly the kinds of wines that I like, why I like them, what kinds of atmospheres I think really make the wine enjoying experience just that much better. It's just going to be a whole lot of fun and an opportunity for any of you who are out vacationing to come by and spend a little quality time with us. And we're going to even have microphones in the Grape Encounters Emporium so that if we get involved in a deep discussion about wine, or just a spirited one, no pun intended, then you can join in on the conversation and we can drink a little wine and make a little radio at the same time. So it's happening next week. We're going to be unveiling the Grape Encounters Emporium on the central coast of California. Again, it's been a dream that I've had for my entire life. And so I hope that you will find the opportunity to come out and say hello. And yes, I'll be here most all the time. So looking forward to seeing you then. Your Grape Encounter continues in just a second with Larry Gifford and the Grape Encounter News. So don't go anywhere. But how could we have bigger news than that?
If you love wine, then you probably love to travel too. And there are two places you should really visit soon. The best part is you don't even have to pack a bag or leave your house. If you're looking for adventures in wine, log on to grapeencounters.com. There you'll find an audio library of more than 300 stories that will take you virtually anywhere you want to go. At grapeencounters.com, you'll find short subjects as well as full stories. All audio can be downloaded with one click, and you'll be amazed at the broad range of subject matter. Another place you really should visit is our Facebook group page. Simply search for Grape Encounters Radio or click on the link on our website. The Grape Encounters Radio group has become a formidable place for wine lovers to exchange ideas, introduce products, and share upcoming events. If you're not already a group member, then join the party on Facebook. Grape Encounters is more than a radio broadcast. It's a family of like-minded, fun-loving, unpretentious wine lovers. Come fill up your glass today.
This is David Wilson, and I want you to sail with me from Rome to Barcelona on one of the most luxurious cruise ships in the world, the completely reimagined Regent Seven Seas Mariner. Every year, I take listeners on a luxury voyage sure to create unforgettable memories. And next May, from the 10th to the 17th, our itinerary will include some of my favorite places on the planet. And I'll be there to make sure that your travel experience is purely amazing. Imagine visiting incomparable Rome, Florence, Portofino, Provence, and breathtaking Barcelona. The ports will be spectacular, and your elegant suite with a private patio will astound you. Book now and get 2-for-1 fares, free round-trip air, $200 shipboard credit, plus you pay nothing extra for wine, cocktails, shore excursions, even tips are included. For more information, click the link at grapeencounters.com. I've got a luxury cabin with your name on it. Click on the link now at grapeencounters.com.
Grape Encounters presents What We Heard Through the Grapevine. Today's top news, trends, and stories.
I read the news today, oh boy, about a lucky man who made the grape.
And it is time for the Grape Encounters news. You know, that seems a little weird to say because the entire show has been nothing but Grape Encounters news, but there is more to talk about in the world of wine. There always is, and here to help us along is our senior wine news correspondent, Lawrence Gifford.
I don't have those business cards yet, David.
I know. Do you want Lawrence or Larry on it?
Larry.
Okay, that seems so informal. You know, wine can be a very formal thing.
I'm approachable.
Well, then why are you sitting on the other side of the studio? With a little thing of pepper spray.
Keep your distance.
All right,
here we go.
What do you got, Larry?
Oregon is claiming 2014 is a banner year for wine. One news release from the Oregon Wine Board claims it just may be remembered as the vintage of a lifetime.
well, then they don't put much stock in coming years, do they?
I guess not.
That's it. We hit the apex and we're done. I don't think that's how he meant it, though.
No, right? But what they're saying, it was an extraordinarily long and warm growing season. Overnight lows were higher than normal, daytime highs in the 90s. Excellent flowering, evenly ripened clusters of grapes. They're really excited about what this year could bring.
Oregon's just exciting from a wine perspective anyway.
Very exciting. You like the Oregon Pinots?
I do. I like the Oregon Pinots a lot. And, you know, I am not a Pinot fan. A very interesting thing, you know, Rex Pickett, who wrote the movie Sideways and pummeled Pinot into the stratosphere, came out with a sequel to Sideways, which is called Vertical. And in that particular book, he abandons the central coast of California, where the movie Sideways is set, and he goes up to Oregon instead.
Oh.
Traitor.
Very cool, though.
Anyway, no, Oregon Pinots, they have characteristics that I really like. I would say this, if you are not a Pinot lover, then try Pinots from Oregon because they're really pretty fantastic.
So how long do you think it'll be before we really know whether this was a vintage of a lifetime?
Well, I don't think I've ever heard vintners organizations come out and say, man, no, this was a bad year.
So a little hyperbole, you think?
Well, yeah, but I think the truth is, you know, I live on a vineyard and all over the Northwest and all the way down to the center part of California. Even though there was a terrible drought, is a terrible drought, that the wines are tasting pretty darn good.
Here's some good news. You want some good news?
Well, I thought Oregon having a banner year was good news.
It is, but more good news.
Even better than Oregon having a banner year?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
You no longer have to work to get the wine stains out of your clothes because it's cool to have wine-stained clothes.
Who said that?
Well, Robert Mondavi is now offering...
Robert Mondavi did not say that. He's not with us any longer.
The winery is now offering wine-dyed clothing.
Oh,
yeah.
That's been my idea. I have dyed clothes in wine. I've done stories on dyeing clothes in wine, and now they're making it sound like it's their own thing.
Well,
they mention me in the article?
They did. Every pair of pants says David Wilson was here.
Well, I never talked about staining pants
in
wine. I don't wear red pants, Larry.
No, it's a collaboration with Crawford Denim. They're offering up a denim shirt with a collar and cuffs lined in red cotton dyed in Mondavi Private Selection Heritage Red Blend 2013. Costs $135 for the shirt.
Well, then I wonder how much that bottle of wine costs.
$13. So do it at home, right?
Well, I have a little twist on this whole thing. I'm not telling anybody because I actually was working with a terrific fashion designer on this very same project. But then she moved all the way across country and we had to kind of abandon the project for a while. And as funny as it may sound, I actually contacted her about maybe 3 weeks ago to resume production on this project. And now the folks at Mondavi are going to say I copied them.
Well, you've set the record straight.
But the thing is, Robert Mondavi was a god and still is a god in the wine industry, so pretty much everybody copies him. So I guess it really wouldn't be a big slap in the face if that happened.
No.
Will you wear something that I create for you?
Well, it depends.
Your wear depends?
Okay. Depends on what you create for me to wear.
All right. Okay. All right. All right. I'll stop whining about this story.
I saw this on a blog called A Journal of Musical Things. You know, rock stars love wine. Fergie, AC/DC, Motorhead, they all have their own wine labels along with a bunch of others.
Do they love the wine or do they love having their picture on the wine label?
You would have to ask them each individually. I have to believe that there is some affinity towards wine.
I don't understand why Fergie, who legitimately owns a winery, because a lot of people who have their name on wines, they just have somebody else make them for them.
Sure. But her
they opened up Ferguson Crest Winery. And they posted all these pictures of Fergie at the winery, but there's one where she's stomping grapes and she's wearing hip waders.
Oh.
You know, as beautiful as Fergie is, hip waders don't do it for most people. Although there's probably somebody out there with a hip waiter fetish, but as for me, I would have liked to have seen Fergie stomping the grapes in her bare feet. But some of these other rockers, not so sure.
Well, how would you
I'd make them put on hip waiters?
How would you like Tragically Hip the band to dress? Because they now have their own label.
Well, that's obvious. I want them to wear my wine-dyed clothes.
Okay. The wine is the Tragically Hip Grand Reserve Red Fully Completely, the bottle featuring an exact replication of the original artwork that first appeared on the album Fully Completely. The wine was made by the band members in conjunction with Stony Ridge Estate Winery.
Okay.
And the bottle reads this, robust, full-bodied red blend of Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, and Merlot with aromas of blackcurrant, cherry, baking spice, and tobacco. aromatics carry onto the palate with a silky mouthfeel and an extended finish.
These are rock and rollers. I'm surprised it didn't have a hint of, well, you know.
You can get this wine at thehip.com/wine. A few weeks ago, we did tell you about Melissa Etheridge's cannabis-infused wine.
Ah, nice segue, Larry.
Thank you. You were asking a lot of questions.
Yes,
how do you make it? What's it taste like? Does it get you high?
I was asking on behalf of my listeners. I was not asking for my own edification.
Well, I did some research.
Okay.
I've got some answers.
I don't use drugs of any kind.
All right. The Weed Eater is a column on the website munchies.vice.com, and they assembled a panel of testers to taste this.
Yes.
Here's what they found out.
What?
The first sip of each variety jarred the senses with a taste that's not at all unpleasant, just unfamiliar when delivered by a glass of wine.
Okay.
Usually such flavors and aromas reach the palate only when you lower your nose into a large bag of weed. The cannabis buzz is subtle but quite pleasant and very pleasantly soothing to both the body and the mind. And then here's how it's made. The wine process starts with buying juice from a well-known biodynamic vineyard in the Central California area. Immediately after, the grapes are crushed. That's poured into French oak aging barrels, which are already filled with pounds of homegrown, outdoor, organic cannabis buds that are all harvested, dried, cured, and weighed out in advance. Since the cannabis is never heated, a cold extraction takes place during fermentation, meaning the plant compounds are transferred to the wine in an acidic form, so you get the benefits, but not necessarily all the euphoria.
So it makes you feel better, but it doesn't give you a buzz.
Not the same way that if smoking it, if you heated it up.
Right. Do you know what kind of grapes they're making this out of, did they say?
They have like six different varietals.
Familiar varietals?
Yeah.
Okay, well.
So that's the news as we see it.
I asked you last time if you could get Melissa Etheridge in here. I mean, you know everybody.
Yeah, I've got some calls into her. She said her people would get back to me.
Okay, all right. But they were
but they
were
said,
busy drinking wine.
Don't bother calling us. We'll call you.
Yeah, and bring a pizza. Make that 20 of them.
And a couch.
All right. Is that it for the news?
That's all the news we got today.
That's it for Grape Encounters then. So thank you for being with us. And we will be back here next week. Same time, same channel. Larry, I expect Melissa Etheridge to be sitting in the studio next to you next week.
I hope you're not disappointed.
Nothing about you ever disappoints me.
Oh,
you never know what part of the country or the world the Grape Encounters microphones will take you to. Don't miss a single experience. Your Grape Encounter isn't over. We're just taking a breather until next week's edition.